Hello everyone, it's Tim Pichot and it is April 2nd, and moments ago the Dow just crossed down negative 600. It was down only 580 as I was trying to upload this video, but it looks like we just crossed 600 points just moments ago. And one of the things that I wanted to bring to my attention as I was reading this morning was the results for quarter one just came out, and the title on Zero Hedge is Q1 2018 was a disaster for America. And really the premise of this article was that it took 110, or the GDP growth was $110 billion. However, it took $621 billion of debt to get that $100 billion. Now, Donald Trump is a businessman, but he's also a salesman, he's also a showman, and any businessman would know that if it took $600 billion of basically new debt to acquire $100 billion worth of growth, that that would not be a great investment. Now, compared to his predecessor, and this was an article that I did in October 2016, so a month before the election, and probably showing a little grainy right now. So if you're looking at this, if you're listening to me on the podcast, first off, greatly appreciate it. Really appreciate all of your support and for people that are liking this, sharing this, and everyone that's dealing with me, definitely appreciate that. But if you're looking at this through a YouTube video or through DTube, still trying to figure out how to get some of these longer videos on the DTube, what you see is an article I had from a little over a year, or actually close to 2 years ago, October 2016, right before the presidential election. And what it shows is that it took $10 of new debt to create $1 of new GDP. Now, it looks like Trump, had a 6-to-1. Looks like that's a much better ratio than his predecessor. Again, that's just, one of the quarters. Now, reason that this is important, the reason why I want to bring this up is, a lot of times people will say, ask people, I guess they don't ask people how much money they make, but people perceive in America that, someone's rich if they're making $100,000, or they're rich if they're making $200,000. But a lot of times what they don't really ever seem to think is, what that person's net worth is. Now, it's not like people go around, having a sticker on their back saying what their net worth is, so it makes it a little bit trickier. But, let's say, someone was making $100,000 and had a net worth of $500,000, and someone was making, $100,000 and had a net worth of negative $100,000, you would not consider both of them rich, but society and how people in general view them probably would. And just like the government, if you, let's say, made, $18 trillion of, total GDP, and now you're at $19 trillion, but the debt went from $10 to $20 trillion, conversely, you'd say, well, that's a big problem. You only gained, a couple trillion dollars here and there in new revenue, but yet you had to double the debt to get that. So not a great deal. Just like, if you were, you go from making $100,000 a year in your business to now you're making $120,000 a year, maybe you've increased the net worth, of your business. Let's say, because now you're earning an extra $20,000. Let's say you've got a 3x multiple. So now maybe your business is worth $60,000 more. But if you had to, increase the debt of your company by, $500,000 to make it worth $60,000 more, wouldn't be a great trade-off, as much of us, can agree. Unless there's some sort of, other facet, or there's this other, growth projection you've got going on, or maybe after that you don't have to spend any more debt because that was a one-time capital expenditure, then, in business, maybe you can give them the benefit of the doubt with that. However, with the government, that is absolutely not the case. So if you are listening to me right now, what I'm looking at right now is the U.S. debt clock. And this is a site I have not been to in a while. It is usdebtclock.org, usdebtclock.org. And really has, it can be pretty intimidating if you're looking at this. It has, probably like 100 different tabs of different insights into, basically the government debt. And one of the ones that I like looking at is sort of in the middle at the bottom is called liability per taxpayer. So that's if you take all the U.S. unfunded liabilities and then divide it by the amount of actual taxpayers, and it's just under $1 million per taxpayer. So you're looking at $928,000 per taxpayer. So a pretty dire situation. We've got, of course, we've got the debt sitting in at $21 trillion. And has, just about every single metric that you can possibly imagine on here. Now, another interesting thing is here, it has the U.S. federal budget deficit over at $6 trillion when you use a GAAP, which is a generally accepted accounting principles. Now, you know, of course, you know, the government, you know, they're going to make the number as rosy as possible so they don't actually use the gap numbers when they come up with their own numbers. So they don't actually take into account the unfunded liabilities. So according to this, the unfunded liabilities are $112 trillion, inching ever closer to $113 trillion. Again, that is with a T. And that's highlighted by, you've got Social Security coming in at close to $17 trillion. And then you've got the Medicare liability coming in at $28 trillion. And why that's particularly troubling is that those numbers are going to be starting to massively, massively balloon as we've got 10,000 baby boomers a day turning 65 who are now eligible for Medicare. So Medicare, is as baby boomers start getting start retiring, now they're not paying into the system, now they're collecting from the system. Also going to be bad news for Social Security as well, but a lot of times people focus on, you know, the debt and Social Security and seeing how bad Social Security is, but Social Security is nowhere near as bad as Medicare. And in the future, the Medicare, especially with the healthcare costs getting out of control, that's going to be an even bigger and bigger, bigger proportion of the debt. Then you've got, you know, total spending at federal, state, and local levels. You're looking at over $7 trillion there. Debt to GDP ratio, 106. So if, you know, we can keep going on and on and on, and what we see is that basically it's a pretty dire situation. And I remember doing this, you know, shortly after I graduated in 2008, like when I was really trying to get down to the bottom of things. And, you know, I also, I think at one point took, you know, the unfunded liabilities and divided it by the amount of gold that was outstanding. And it was really a pretty pathetic number. And I could probably go ahead and do that right now. So just bear with me just a second. And actually, it seems that they have changed the way that this site is laid out, so I can't really do it how I used to do it before or as easily, so we're just going to skip that for right now. Now what I'm looking at is the Federal Reserve Economic Database of St. Louis, also known as FRED. So for those of you who are watching this or who are listening to me and aren't seeing the graph, is now we've got federal public debt. And so we've got, you know, 2008 Q1, $9.4 trillion. Now we're sitting at $21 trillion. And I think Trump is going to be the first president to go through. So, I mean, he went through, you know, I think we went from, where are we at? So in 2018, we just crossed from 19 over to 20. And now we're going to be crossing to 21. And he might be the first president to, you know, go across, you know, three different handles in 1 year. So going from, you know, 20 to 21 to 22. Could be the first president to do that. Again, not a very great distinction that you want, and not all of it is not really to blame for that. But his problem is he is embracing all of this and embracing the stock market, and really they are setting him up to fail. And if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. I see a lot of people who are also talking about, you know, his high approval ratings, and right now, you know, the approval ratings don't matter. The only approval rating that matters is the approval rating that are in the states, the swing states. So unless you're in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or Ohio, trying to think of, you know, Florida, Wisconsin was another one. So unless you're in those swing states, it's really only the independent votes in those states are the only people that really matter. And everyone that votes Republican all the time, you don't matter. Everyone that votes Democrat all the time, you don't matter. People that vote to the Green Party, you know, they probably don't matter. You know, the Libertarians are starting to, you know, with their close to 5%, I think we're like 4.5%. You know, they're starting to really have a big impact, especially when these elections are only, you know, decided by, you know, in some places, in some states, you know, were decided by maybe like a couple thousand votes. You know, we had in 2000, Florida was decided by, I think it was like 600 votes. Right now, what I'm looking at is the FRED database for total consumer credit owned debt. If we go back to 2008, at the start of the recession, was about, looks like $2.6 trillion. Now that number is close to $4 trillion. So we're at $3.8 trillion. So again, another sign of things that are not great to do. And what I want to do is I want to shift over to cryptocurrencies. I'm looking right now and the market is down closer to 650 now. But another market that has been down big time has been the cryptocurrency market. And so just to back up 1 second. So I found out on Good Friday, that the RAA that I'm going with, or that I will be going with soon, so I'm not with them right now, Innovative Advisory Group, their appointment paperwork was just approved on Good Friday by the state of Arizona. So I sent in my paperwork the next day, got it in the mail before Easter. So then that way I can get ready to roll over here. So hopefully I'm looking at maybe like an April 15th, right around there start date, not obviously not not my favorite day of the year, but it is what it is, and we are getting going. So if you are interested in having cryptocurrencies in your portfolio, if you're interested and also our strategies where we can limit the downside while increasing the upside, make sure in the link below we'll have a little click funnel that you guys can put in your name information in, and then we can schedule a time to come talk with me. For I think right now we're doing half an hour. That's probably gonna be moved down to 15 minutes as there's some people that have been contacting me where it's been more of like a solicitation type contact, and I promised half an hour and I was just trying to do everything I could to get off the phone with a few of these people. So maybe we might be limiting that down to 15. So get in now and you're gonna be talking with actually me. Unless you're watching this maybe a year from now, then maybe you won't be talking directly with me. But for right now, you are talking directly with me if you want to, figure out how you can get cryptocurrencies in your portfolio alongside traditional assets. On the traditional asset side of things, let's say you don't want any cryptocurrencies in your portfolios. Well, one of the things that we can do is we have the ability, and this is probably going to be limited to people, above 200,000, quarter million mark, where we can essentially provide downside protection on our growth portfolios by buying a little bit of insurance. So what we do is we buy some put options on there, use a small percentage of the portfolio to do that. Then at that point, we know that the most you can lose, in any given year could be, 3.5 or 5%, depending on the price of that insurance. So we can essentially, what you're looking at is getting most of the upside, almost all the upside, and then greatly limiting your downside. And at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants. They want to know that they're getting as much market growth as the general market, but they don't want to lose as much. And especially if you're close to retirement, especially if you just retired, especially if you're, about to, retire in the next year or two, this is definitely something that you should be looking into. And another crazy thing is, I'm not sure if I have this pulled up right now, is earlier today I watched this, it was like a 23-minute presentation by Tom Lee. Tom Lee is a pretty well-known investment guy. He'd worked for I think JP Morgan is a fund analyst, Salomon Brothers, a few other places. Now he is the owner of Fundstrat. So it's Fund, STRAT. And he's really kind of one of the go-to crypto guys that, that the mainstream media will go to. And he had some really interesting things to say. And one of the interesting things he had to say was that introducing Bitcoin into your portfolio actually decreases the volatility. Now that might sound like a crazy concept, but one thing you guys have to understand is that when you have assets that aren't correlated with one another, that sometimes when some assets go down, other assets go up, so they're inversely correlated, and that's really kind of the holy grail of what these money managers try doing. And so because of how Bitcoin acts, that by putting in a tiny bit of it, you could actually decrease the overall volatility, because as everything else is going down, in some cases, this could go up to then offset things, or at least in the long term. And in the short term, when risk assets go down, probably all risk assets go down, but in the longer term of things, what I want to do is now play this video, and hopefully we actually have the audio on here. So what I probably have to do right now is pause this and then dub it back over. So just bear with me just a second.
Singapore, Russia. It's bigger than Ireland, Spain, Israel, Greece, Turkey, Vietnam. Wall Street has thousands and thousands of bankers and research traders, everybody, hedge funds dedicated to these other countries. This is going to start to focus on crypto. And the third reason is that as a portfolio strategy, crypto is uncorrelated alpha. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at this. If you look at each of those lines at the top, that represents the correlation of Bitcoin to stocks, which is blue, to bonds, which are red, gold, which is gold, and hedge funds, which is light blue. Bitcoin and crypto are uncorrelated to other markets right now. It is uncorrelated. That is almost a holy grail for portfolio allocation. And to understand why this matters, the bottom line on that chart is if you had a typical 60-40 bond equity portfolio. The line just above it is if you put 2% into Bitcoin. Your returns would have gone from 6% to 8%. And your drawdown would have actually been smaller, and your annualized vol is lower. Bitcoin reduces your portfolio volatility, believe it or not. And the top chart, that blue one where it went stratospheric, is a 5% allocation. So what we're saying is you don't need to bet your firm on crypto to see uncorrelated alpha.
And that's just an absolutely amazing revelation. And it's just something that a lot of people don't grasp, that there's ways where you can actually be, you can introduce more risk in your portfolio, but because of how things are correlated with one another, make your overall portfolio less risky. In the last podcast we just did, actually, I just released it today, which is April 2nd, but I made it on March 22nd for my existing clients, or for my clients who were with me before. And I really went over that in a little bit of detail. And for those of you who are listening to me right now, what it shows is you have somebody that has a 60% in stocks, they're 40% in bonds. It's very typical what you see of your average retiree. And what it's looking like is, you know, their average return was 6.47, their volatility was 7.38, and their max drawdown was 7.9. Now we introduce somebody that instead of having 60% stocks, they had 58, and they also had 40% in bonds, and then they put 2% into Bitcoin. And what we looked at now is, now instead of at 6.47, now they're actually at 8.73. So over 2% better year over year. And the volatility went from 7.38 down to 7.32. And the drawdown went from 7.9 to 7.2. So it's actually was showing that you can introduce Bitcoin into a portfolio in this manner, and it actually decreased the risk in the portfolio, increased the return, and decrease the max drawdown. Now there's two other examples here where it showed a moderate allocation. So they used 55% stocks, they kept the same 40 in bonds, and then they used 5% now in Bitcoin. And so now it showed the growth rate going all the way to 12.14% per year. The volatility was at 7.8, so not too much difference volatility, and the max drawdown was 7.4%. So again, the max drawdown in the typical 740 was 7.9, now it's 7.4. So actually it was less than the 60-40 portfolio, which is pretty crazy. Now the last one is a Bitcoin plus what they call crypto 10. So it's sort of like creating an index of the top 10 cryptos. So they put 5% into that, 5% into Bitcoin, the same 40% into bonds, and then 50% into stocks as opposed to 60% in stocks. And what we're looking at now is the actual year over year return was at 19.22%. The volatility was 9.54. So again, that was more volatility than before. And the max drawdown was 8% as opposed to 7.9, where, you know, again, 7.9 was your typical 60-40 portfolio versus 8. I would say that if you are about to retire, that there's no reason you should even be in bonds unless you're going to have some type of strategy that says, you know, we're going to be really conservative, we're going to hope everything crashes, and then we're going to go from this really conservative asset to something else that's more risky. But what I'll tell you right now is that I started my career the day the market crashed, and try convincing people to do something that is completely counterintuitive to everything they've ever been taught before. To try convincing somebody to invest in the real estate in 2011 or 2012. So, I mean, I had people that were criticizing me moving to Arizona from New York, and you know, a lot of people I went to school with were like, you know, why would you move to Arizona? The real estate absolutely plummeted. You know, what are you, like, not watching news? What are you, an idiot? Well, I know I bought my house. We're in contract March 2012, almost the exact bottom, and now we're going to be, we just put our house on the market again, and you know, we're going to be realizing, you know, a pretty nice gain from that home. Hopefully, we can get out of Dodge in time before everything crashes with that. But again, you know, try convincing somebody after the stock market's gone down 60% to then jump into the stock market. Try convincing somebody to jump into Bitcoin after it's gone down 75%, after it's gone down 80%, which is something that is very, very common in the Bitcoin market. And what we saw was in 2000, let's say, you know, 8 to 2000, basically till about August of last year, the people that were getting into the crypto community space were people that, you know, understood blockchain, they understood, you know, really the kind of greater philosophical reasons to get into this. They weren't really necessarily in it because they thought they were going to make, you know, $1 billion. They were in it for philosophical reasons. They understood blockchain. And then what happened is when the price started going up, you saw a lot of people start piling on. You saw people that could really give two shits about, you know, changing the world, could give two shits about, you know, the underlying blockchain technology. And the conversation was then changed to, you know, what's going to pop? What's going to moon? What's going to, and that's moon. So M-O-O-N, like the moon that's up in the air. So that's what people are saying. You know, the big phrase with all the crypto guys is, you know, we need to moon and we need to go get our Lambos. And so it became this crowd that really, you know, they weren't in it to, you know, screw the central banks. They weren't in it to hedge themselves, you know, for when central banks ultimately create some huge calamity. They weren't in it because they were philosophically opposed to the banks. You know, they were in it because they thought they're going to make a whole bunch of money, and they didn't understand, you know, if you go back and look at the charts on Bitcoin, that this is something that is a common occurrence. You have, let me just pause this for a second so I can get a better screenshot. All right, so what I am at coinmarketcap.com right now, and so I've got a chart where it shows Bitcoin. What I'm looking at is 2013, 2015. So 2013, at one point, you know, we had crossed over $1,000. Then it got all the way down to close to $200. So it's like I'm trying to scroll here, 219, 218, yeah, so it's 213, 209. Actually, 190, I think that was a 197 I saw down there. So you went from over $1,000 down to under 200. There's plenty of other stories of it doing the same thing. So now, I mean, if we back out of this and go to the entirety of the graph, is now we see, you know, it, you know, obviously it was over 20,000 on like one exchange briefly, but it was a straight up hyperbolic move where nobody wanted to sell, everybody wanted to buy. And what really was one of the major catalysts for the selling was actually Mt. Gox, which, you know, that's a whole nother story, but Mt. Gox was holding on to an absolute ton of Bitcoin as trustees, and their trustee, who his last name was the same as the hot dog eating champion, the Japanese guy, or the former champion. I think the new champion is Joey. It's like Joey Chestnuts or something. But the older guy was Kobayashi. So the trustee also, I doubt it's the same one, but Kobayashi was selling a massive, massive, massive amount of Bitcoin. And that's really one of the catalysts to really start this market downturn. And they still do have, you know, quite a bit left that they do have to sell. But if you take a look at the, you know, the grand scheme of things, is I decided that in August is when I was really, you know, looking into starting this company. In August, Bitcoin was at, you know, $3,000 at one point. Yeah, let's see. No, at one point, August 2nd, it was $2,700. So people are like, well, you know, oh my God, you know, Tim, you're starting this company. You know, what a terrible time to start this. You must be devastated. You know, Bitcoin went from 20,000 and now it's at 7,000. You've got to be, you know, heartbroken. I'll be honest, you know, I was starting to get, you know, a little worried there because I saw this hyperbolic move and I thought, you know, well, you know, it's going to be hard convincing people to get in at $20,000, or at least for me morally, because we've already seen this gigantic run up. Now, I am of the opinion, like Tom Lee, the strategist who I just mentioned before, and I would advise people to go watch that entire 23-minute video. But the first thing you should do is you should never invest in anything that you don't know about. Now, the second thing is that you really, you know, if you don't know like the history of Bitcoin and you aren't like comfortable with how much you're willing to lose on this, you know, you shouldn't just jump in all at once, because there's a whole bunch of people who, when Bitcoin was at 20,000, 15,000, 10,000 for the first time, they were wishing Bitcoin was back at 5,000 so they could have bought it. And, you know, people are telling me, yeah, Tim, I would have definitely bought it if I had only known about it. Well, then now it's at, you know, it just went from a little, it was just down below 6 when I started this, not below 6, but below 7 into the 6s. Now it's above 7,000. And those same people want nothing to do with Bitcoin. So if you don't want something at $7,000, but you want it at $20,000, well, then that is absolutely stupid. If you wanted that house at $200,000, but now you don't want that house at $100,000, then what's wrong with you? If you don't want it, more of it when it's less money, then it's not a good investment. And the only reason to get into something is because it's going up is a terrible reason to get into it. You should know the understanding of blockchain. And if, for anyone who goes, and I'm going to have a link down below here where, if for anyone that signs up, I've got this reference guide that I've created that probably has, you know, 20 of the best videos that I've hand selected, that I've hand picked out. In some cases, I actually made the videos myself. Many of them I didn't, so it's not just one big plug for me. I've got several videos from other people, including Tom Lee, including some of the, you know, Andreas Antonopoulos, some of the best videos that I've handpicked. So if you guys go to the link at the bottom, that you'll not only be able to get that, but then also, you know, I'll, you know, contact you about trying to get a time to get together to see if we can put, if it would be wise to put, you know, Bitcoin into your portfolios, if it'd be wise to put Bitcoin into your IRA. I will, to my knowledge, be, you know, if there's someone else that's out there, I don't know about it, but I believe I'm one of the first, if not the first, licensed advisor, probably the first certified financial planner as well, that can get you into not only the traditional investments, but also the cryptos. And so, and we can do this in IRAs as well. So right now, I think it's actually a great time. If you know, if you are aware of Bitcoin, if you know a lot about it, if you've been studying this for a while, if you can, you know, rattle off all these different stats, if you've been, you know, following this for a long time and have, you know, a high, you know, threshold for risk, then I would say now would be a great time to get in. We've seen everything, you know, absolutely, you know, plummet in value the past, since the beginning of this year. And when things plummet is usually the best time to get in. Lord Nathan Rothschild said the best time to buy is when there's blood in the streets. You know, I'm not sure if we're quite there at the blood of the streets levels, but, you know, we've got Ethereum that's down at 386. I think at one point it was above 1200. Bitcoin Cash, you know, I think it was over $2,000. I mean, briefly, there was like a tiny time lapse when Bitcoin Cash got onto the Coinbase exchange that it went through the roof, but that was more due to manipulation. So, you know, I think it was a little bit above 2,000. Litecoin was above 300. Now it's closer to 100. EOS, you know, all these ones, you know, Ripple still wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. If you guys want to know more on that, I believe I had a video at the end of last year. It was called like Tim's 2-minute rant on Ripple. You guys can see more about that. But now I do think that this is a great time. I'm probably not going to be able to get to anybody who contacts me today about getting into this probably until May, because I've got to take care of the current clients. And probably at this point, you're probably even looking towards like the end of May. So depending on when you are receiving this, when you're getting into the queue, if you are interested in learning more, you know, you can email me at tim@thelibertyadvisor.com. And once I'm up and running, we'll get back to you. The website is thelibertyadvisor.com. We're making some tweaks to it. We're making sure the blog, we're sort of migrating from having all of it at libertarianadvisor.com to now migrating it over. And instead of having a retirement blog and having a political blog, it's going to be one blog, but then we're going to have different sections in there. So you guys can get the podcast. If you want to, you know, just listen to me for economics, you'll be able to, you know, see everything I write about for economics. If you just want retirement, you can get the retirement. If you just want the politics, you can just get the politics. If you just want the crypto, you get the crypto, so on and so forth. You guys get the picture, but we are still don't have that 100% under wraps right now. So still things are still sort of bifurcated as we're trying to move everything all into one. But part of this is I sort of had to wait until we are, you know, officially live with SEC and everything else before we can start advertising all this. But anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this today. Hope you found this useful. Let me know, you know, in the comments, you know, other videos you guys would like me to see in the future. If you like these, let me know. If you don't, let me know. And, you know, thank you for everything. And hope you guys become clients. Hope you guys, really, if you guys know people that are close to retirement, you're going to do them a great service by telling them that they should talk with me. You know, you could be saving their retirements, especially if we get them in these portfolios where we use the, you know, the protected growth strategies to limit the downside risk. I would definitely, you know, recommend that for a lot of people out there. And again, I'm not giving any carte blanche investment advice to everybody out there. You know, this is highly customizable advice. If you become a client of the Liberty Advisor, you know, everything I just mentioned right now, you know, there's no way that I can, you know, in this format that you should take any advice I say right now and go apply it to yourself without talking to a financial professional, because everyone's going to have their own unique circumstances. Everyone's going to have their own caveats, their own tolerance of risk, their own, you know, basically you name it. There's tons of different variables that are out there. So make sure you're working with somebody that you know, like, and trust, and that you think they're going to do the best job out there for you, and ultimately that they have your best interest in mind. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your